Bhakti means the activities of devotion. So there is work. But that work should be based on devotion, and the devotion, it comes very much through hearing. And the process, the ability, the know-how, the instructions on how to work, what is the consciousness while one is working, etc., and what to do and what not to do, that comes by hearing. And if we don't hear, we will just imagine what will be pleasing to Krishna. And that may not be at all pleasing to Krishna. It will just be our own imagination, our own mind from our own experience. But this hearing is a descending process. It reveals Krishna to us within the world, within our minds. Krishna descends through the hearing process. This is also described by Lord Brahma in his prayers in the third canto. It's also described. Okay. Yad yad diyatad urugaya vibhavayanti tam tam praneeshe saranugraha. That Krishna enters the heart through the hearing process. And whatever way we wish to worship him, he will reciprocate with that and appear in that way. And this is exhibited throughout the entirety of the Bhagavatam. Specifically, I'm thinking of when the queens of Dwarka greet Krishna when he enters their palace after being in Kurukshetra and being in Hastinapur. The purports, Prabhupada's purports describe that their loving relationship is based on their desire and Krishna's reciprocation with their desire. So when one has a completely pure and intense desire to love Krishna in a specific way, Krishna will reciprocate with that fully. That's yayatam mam prapadyante. Whatever we want, Krishna will reciprocate with us in that way. If we don't want to see Krishna, everywhere we look we will see anything, everything and anything but Krishna. If we want to see Krishna everywhere due to our love, if we want to see Krishna's mercy everywhere, Krishna will reveal his mercy to us everywhere. This is Krishna's mercy, specifically. Tadur anugrahaya, his mercy. So we heard yesterday, first of all, Brahma glorified the incredible beauty of Krishna. And he said that it was inconceivable how potent Krishna's body was. And therefore, because he was engaging in pastimes with that inconceivable body, how much pleasure he was obtaining through the activities, the loving activities with his devotees in Vrindavan, was inconceivable to Brahma, who was the most intelligent, most aware person, conscious person in the universe. And he was saying it was inconceivable. So does that mean that it is impossible to know anything about Krishna? So in the second verse, that was the first and the second verse. And the third verse says, no, it is possible to know about Krishna, but as we were just saying, that jnane prayasam urupastinamanta eva jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiya vartam, that one learns by a different process. One learns about Krishna not by using his own intelligence alone, because Krishna's inconceivable power is indeed inconceivable, and the furthest reaches of the intelligence cannot penetrate into Krishna's potency. So therefore the method is different. It's hearing from Krishna, the origin of all knowledge about himself. He is the one who knows about himself, and he explains it, and we hear it through the disciplic succession, we hear it through his words and the words of the Bhagavad Gita and the words of the sadhus who are aware of Krishna, who are Krishna conscious. And then one doesn't have to do anything remarkable in the sense of leaving the world or in the sense of becoming a great renunciant or a great yogi No, one just has to give up the process of speculative knowledge and just hear purely about Krishna, and one will become attracted to Krishna. And one will even conquer Krishna. So that's what we read yesterday. Today, the next verse, my dear Lord, Shreya Shratim Bhakti Mudasyate Vibhu, also an important verse and a well-known verse, Kleshanti Ye Kevalabodha Labhyate Tesham Maso Kleshada Eva Shishyate Nanyat Yata Stula Tusha Vaghatinam. My dear Lord, Brahma says, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If one wants to know Krishna, one should perform bhakti yoga, devotional service to him. And if someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, tries to approach Krishna through the path of speculative knowledge, through his own power, he gives up devotion, devotional service, bhakti yoga, to apply his intelligence to understand Krishna, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result. What is his desired result? Yeah, to understand and love Krishna. He will not achieve it if he gives up devotional service, the hearing process, and all of the devotional processes. He will not achieve his desired result, even though he's trying his best, because this is not the process of understanding Krishna. And now he gives an example to help us understand. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain. Why? Because there's nothing there. It is not possible. No matter how sincerely he beats the threshes the wheat, no matter how powerful, expert, intelligent, not possible. So as a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. The hard work that he puts in, the hard work that he puts in is his only gain. He doesn't get anything practical result. Now we're going to read first the commentary, part of the commentary of Sanatana Goswami, and then part of the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, text 4. Sanatana Goswami says, but it may be objected, do we not see many who, rejecting the process of devotional service, are endeavoring for knowledge? There are so many people who think, oh, bhakti, no, that's for the people who can't gain knowledge. So we reject devotional service. We'll take to some very deep meditation. So that is replied to in the verse beginning Shreya Shratim, Sanatana Goswami says. What about those people who give up devotional service, reject devotional service to gain knowledge? Many people do. Sanatana Goswami continues. But it may be questioned, by taking labor in the practice of yoga and other processes, isn't there inevitably the gain of prestige and wealth? This is replied to, that there is no other result. Nothing else at all is gained. In this regard, a practical example is stated. Just as a fool is laughed at by the people if he's trying to beat the great heap of chaff of the wheat separated from the husk. Tusha means the leftover husks, and by destroying them with excessive thrashing, One simply achieves pain in his hands and other limbs. O Vibhu means, O Master, thus indicating that he must be worshipped. Consequently, for such persons who give up devotional service, there will also be a fall down into hell, because the unbridled mind and senses will eventually take one into materialistic activities. Similarly, it is stated in the 11th canto, Ya Esham Purusham Shakshar Atmar Prabhavam Ishvaram Na Bhajanti Avajananti Stanad Brashta Patantyada. I don't have the translation of that here. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. One can achieve success by performing any one of the methods of bhakti, such as hearing and chanting. The Nisringa Purana confirms this. Since one can easily attain the original personality of Godhead by worshipping him with devotion, using leaves, flowers, fruits, and water, which are freely available, why does one need to endeavor for liberation separately? Though this is true, those who reject bhakti and pursue the path of speculative knowledge, jnana, only gain trouble and botheration. This is the intention of this verse. And we see this, practically speaking, all the people, not all the people, but almost all of those who are interested in contemporary society, in spiritual life, they are doing some type of jnana, type of path of meditation or something like that. Where does one see one performing bhakti or devotion? And the result of that path is nothing, practically speaking, only trouble. Sridhar Swami says that jnana is a dry path, Vishwanath continues, whereas bhakti is a cool stream flowing like a river of honey. The word Shreya, supreme benefit, also refers to all the fruits of other processes such as karma and jnana. The path of bhakti gives all these fruits, and it is thus called Shreya Shritim, the path of supreme benefit. The jnanis who reject Udasya, the path of auspiciousness, Shreya Shritim, get only suffering, Kleshada. It is like beating a huge pile of empty husks of rice. The result of the effort is pain in the hands and no rice or wheat, depending upon, or it doesn't make a difference. If it's empty, you get neither rice nor wheat. So the acharyas have commented in that way. Now Brahma is going to continue. O Almighty Lord, in the past, many yogis in this world, so he's just rejected the process of jnana. But what is the fruit of yoga? Almighty Lord, in the past, many yogis in this world achieved the platform of devotional service by offering all their endeavors unto you and faithfully carrying out their prescribed duties. So here, the yogis who perform their duties properly and offer the results to Krishna, they gain devotion ultimately. Devotional service, they gain that ultimately, because when they offer the fruits of their work to Krishna, as the Bhagavad Gita describes, Shayan Sadama Vigana Paradamatsvanustitat, O Lord, be pleased by my performance of this duty, because that's the ultimate part of the Varnashrama system, the prescribed duties that it is, Krishna says, Varnashrama Vibhagasa, that he is the one, Chaturvana Maya Srishtam Gunakarma Vibhagasa, that he is the one who created the system, Varnashrama system. So therefore, he created the system to engage everyone in such a way, according to their nature, that they live practically in the material world, but simultaneously make spiritual advancement. So it's Krishna's system. So because it's Krishna's system, if one follows it, one is doing devotional service to Krishna. I'm doing it, why? Because Krishna, it is Krishna's system, it is my offering to Him. So that is a very nice way to perform one's vanashrama duties, in, as in, knowing that they're prescribed by Krishna. So the result for yogis is that they achieve the platform of devotional service by doing this. Through such devotional service, performing one's prescribed duties, perfected by the processes of hearing and chanting about you, they came to understand you, O Infallible One, and could easily surrender to you and achieve your supreme abode. So what is the second part, the second idea added in the second half of the verse? They performed, they attained devotional service. Yeah, but right before that, how did they perform devotional service, but they achieved the perfection of their service. Listen again. O Almighty Lord, in the past, many yogis in this world achieved the platform of devotional service by offering all their endeavors unto you and faithfully carrying out their prescribed duties. Through such devotional service, perfected by the process of hearing and chanting about you, they came to understand you. They understood Krishna's position. O Infallible One. So they came to understand you, O Infallible One, and could easily surrender unto you and achieve your supreme abode. So here is a progression of activities. First, they perform their prescribed duties, but they did it for Krishna's pleasure, these yogis, and then they perfected that by hearing and chanting about Krishna, which made them understand who Krishna was and his position, and therefore they surrendered to him, and then they achieved his supreme abode. Here is Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment on this, or part of his comment. There is another meaning of the word gunatmana in this verse. Oops, that's not the one. Five. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, in the previous two verses, Brahma used negative and positive statements to establish that devotional service is the means of attaining the Lord. The negative statement was, it's like if you give up devotional service, it's like beating empty husks of grain. You get nothing. And the positive statement is that if you just stay in your place, you don't have to do anything strenuous, just hear about the Lord. Just hearing about him will cause one to transcend and one conquers him. So that's the positive statement and the negative statement. The present verse describes the primary activities of bhakti, namely hearing and chanting about Krishna. Brahma said, O Almighty Lord, Bhuman, in this world there are many who practice bhakti and offer their activities to you, engaging all their senses in work of devotion. Being fully absorbed in bhakti with faith and disregarding vanashrama, they engage in hearing and chanting only about you. This is their interest. They don't have interest in hearing and chanting about anyone else. When we think about it in this world, we don't think of other people doing hearing and chanting, but that's what goes on. The newspapers are hearing about the mundane activities of this world, or the movies are hearing about the fictional activities, and then the chanting about it is, did you hear the latest? Blah, 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 this is going on, and that's going on, and this one did this, and in this movie I saw this, in this book I read I did this, and this person is doing this, and my friend is doing that. So this process of hearing and chanting is continuously going on. But these yogis who achieve perfection, it begins with this pure, pristine desire. Not begins with it, but a result or a prior stage to their perfection is this desire to hear about nothing other than Krishna. This is wonderful. This is glorious. Everything else leaves the taste of ashes in their mouth. No other desire. So being fully absorbed in bhakti with faith and disregarding varnashrama, they engage in hearing and chanting only about you. So they have bhakti, deep bhakti with deep faith. By the prema bhakti which arises from hearing and chanting, kato panittaya, they realize your form, qualities and pastimes just by the process of hearing. And thus they attain your eternal association in the spiritual world. This verse can also be taken as a rejection of the yoga process after having rejected jnana in the previous verses. After practicing yoga for a long time, one may come to the platform of devotional service and attain firm devotion to the lotus feet of Krishna. Now, text 6. So yogi, the devotees were talked about, the jnanis were talked about, the yogis have been talked about, and non-devotees in the next text, in 6. Non-devotees, they have no hope to understand something about Krishna. Bhaktyamam vijananti yavanyasthasmitarpita. Non-devotees, however, text 6, cannot realize you in your full personal feature. That's what Brahma is seeing right before his eyes as he's speaking these verses. He's seeing Krishna in his full feature as a cowherd boy who is so beautiful. And that first text described the incredible beauty of Krishna. And it was so simple, yet so captivating. And the acharyas, perhaps Vishwanath described, that the gunja, the berries, the simple Vrindavan seeds that Krishna is wearing as necklaces, fashioned into necklaces, beautiful necklaces, these are more valuable than the jewels of the spiritual world. This is the nature of Vrindavan. It is the most opulent, full of opulence of all dhams, of all places, including far more wonderful than the material world. So non-devotees, however, cannot realize you in your full personal feature. Nevertheless, it may be possible for them to realize your expansion as the impersonal supreme by cultivating direct perception of the self within their heart. They can realize Krishna, but not his personal feature. Vedanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yaj jnanam adayam. There is one absolute truth who is non-dual. There is not Brahman is one absolute truth and the Paramatma is another and Krishna is another. No, there's one absolute truth only. But depending upon the process one uses to, one engages in, one will be awarded by Krishna's mercy a different vision of that one absolute truth. So the non-devotees, the ones who don't have bhakti, it is not that they can't see anything of the absolute truth, but they can only see his impersonal feature, the impersonal supreme, by cultivating direct perception of the self within the heart. They stop the mind and they just become conscious of their consciousness, basically. But there's no they to become conscious of their consciousness, ultimately. But this is basically the process that they use. But they can do this only by purifying the minds and senses of all conceptions of material distinctions and all attachment to material sense objects. So just see, they can find some aspect of the absolute truth, but the aspect they find is not as glorious as the supreme aspect of the absolute truth. Krishna, and look how much trouble their endeavor entails. Listen to what they have to do. They have to purify their minds and senses of all conceptions of material distinctions. They have to remove all conceptions from their mind. Just try to remove conceptions from your mind. You can't, it's impossible, practically speaking, because the mind is so peculiar that if you tell it to do something, okay, from now on you have to remove all conceptions, it will immediately start thinking of conceptions. If you tell your mind you can think of anything you want, but don't think of, I usually say monkeys, but today I say don't think of this chair over here. Think of anything you want, but don't think of that chair. Whatever you do, don't think of that chair. Then the mind will immediately have visions of that chair, and you push them out and they'll come back, and non-chair will be there. And by thinking, I'm not thinking of chairs, you immediately are thinking of chairs. So this is what one has to do. Such a difficult path. Purify their minds and senses of all conceptions of material distinctions and all attachments to material sense objects. Can't think about anything, practically speaking. Only in this way will your impersonal feature manifest itself to them. And then the next text. I'll just read a little Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. For text 7, we'll make a comment and we'll read 7. In time, this is why it's so difficult to why one can't understand Krishna by one's own power. In time, this is text 7 of Brahma's prayers, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth. How many atoms are in, you know? So many. We can't even count, practically speaking, how many atoms there are in this. So many. What to speak of in the entirety of the earth. But even if one had the ability, a philosopher or a scientist, he might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, or the particles of the snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun. Even if one can exactly calculate how many molecules are coming from the sun, or how many atoms in the earth, or how many particles exist of snow. And it says, even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and other luminaries. But amongst these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities? So even if one can do these incalculable things that no one can actually do, still that would not qualify one to understand the innumerable exalted qualities of Krishna, who has come to this earth, Brahma says, to benefit all living entities. The first word of this text is, or the first line is, Gunatmanaste pi gunan vimatum hita vitirnasya charishadesya kalenaya vavimata sukalpar bupam savake mikya mahikadu vasha. So gunatmana, the possessor of all spiritual qualities, that's the first word of this verse, that you have innumerable qualities. So the purport here, Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that Lord Krishna's gunatma, the soul of all superior qualities, because he gives them life. For example, one may discuss in an abstract way such qualities as generosity, intelligence, and mercy, but they come to life only when a person exhibits them. Thus, Lord Krishna's gunatma, because he descends to the material world and reestablishes religious principles by exhibiting all godly qualities himself and inspiring them in others. A living entity who develops the transcendental qualities found in the Lord receives immeasurable benefit and eventually goes with the Lord back to his own abode, where all living beings are liberated and fully endowed with the transcendental nature. Now listen to this interesting point that Sanatana Goswami makes. Because Krishna has unlimited qualities, innumerable qualities. So Sanatana Goswami says, Sanatana Goswami further explains that the Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality for the benefit of each living entity. Who can translate that into their own words? No. I'll read it one more time. Very interesting. The Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality for the benefit of each living entity. Teaching us? Yes, the way I your answer is, yeah.
This is the very givenness of the spirit of the Supreme Lord.
Yes, certainly, variegatedness. But what it seemed to me, although I may not be 100% correct here, is that he has a quality, and each individual will be attracted to a specific quality for the benefit of that living entity. There's something specific. We're individuals, and he will manifest something that, in reciprocation with our individuality, something that will invoke a special appreciation in every living entity that's unique. So even though he's so wonderful, you will be able to see something especially wonderful in him that no one else can see. What do you think about that? Is that appealing?
Yes.
I think so.
Yeah,
because we're individuals. And we want our individual relationship with Krishna. Individual has to mean unique. So there is uniqueness in all our relationships with Krishna. And every soul's vision, because he's an individual, and his desire is satisfied in Krishna. This is wonderful. And here we are, trying to imitate Krishna, trying to satisfy everyone. But we don't have these unlimited qualities that Krishna has. So I'll read this again. He explains that the Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality for the benefit of each living entity. Since there are innumerable living entities within the confines of the material creation, the Lord manifests infinite qualities. Thus every conditioned soul can appreciate the Lord in a particular way. So the individuality is his. The example is given here that even if the most learned scholars could someday count the particles of earth, snow, and light, they would still fail to understand the qualities of the Lord. In this example, earth, snow, and light are progressively more subtle. Thus, it is to be understood that there is an increasing difficulty in counting their virtual infinite particles. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, great personalities like Lord Shankarshan actually have counted the number of atoms on the earth, and even the molecules in the entire universe. Yet even such personalities as Shankarshan, meaning the incarnations of the Lord, the avatars, who have been continuously chanting the glories of the Lord since time immemorial have not even approached the final count of those glories. So no matter how vast the material world, it is finite. And Krishna, no matter, despite that he looks like such a little boy, he is infinite. So wonderful. So here we are. So therefore, Brahma is saying, he's saying therefore, that don't try to understand Krishna by karma, jnana, yoga. There's a different process. Just hear about him. Engage in devotional service. In the final paragraph of this purport, Lord Krishna exhibits his most astonishing qualities during his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan, where he steals butter from the cowherd ladies, dances with his girlfriends, and plays with the cowherd boyfriends as their most dear companion. Although appearing like ordinary human activities, such sublime pastimes embody Lord Krishna's immeasurable and innumerable beautiful transcendental qualities, which are the life and soul of the pure devotees. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur will read one of the paragraphs of his comments. Also about the word gunatmana. Gunatmana in text 7 means, again, the possessor of superior qualities. Guna atmana, the soul of all qualities. So Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, there is another meaning of the word gunatmana. The Lord is the protector of the world consisting of the three gunas, the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. No one can come to an end of counting the qualities of you who are engaged in the pastime of protecting the universe. What to speak of being able to describe the most astonishing qualities that you exhibit? So no one can even understand your qualities, the innumerable qualities of you in your protecting the universe. What to speak of your astonishing qualities that you exhibit during your sweet childhood pastimes in Vrindavan when you steal yogurt from the Braja Gopis? Who can understand these pastimes and the qualities you're exhibiting during those pastimes? And now the final verse we shall read today. And this one's another very famous verse. So there have been some instructions given by Brahma on how to approach Krishna. One was that hearing process, giving up jnana, just stay wherever you are, it doesn't make a difference, just hear about him. And here's another very important instruction. Prabhupada once said this instruction was the secret of devotional service. Please listen to the secret as Brahma reveals it. Tate anukampam susamitshamano bhunjane vatma kritam vipakam vidvavavapurvir vajadana namaste jivatiyo muktipade sadayavak. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body. Such a person is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Who can remember something from that verse that I just read? I'll read it one more time. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him. He's waiting for Krishna's mercy. But not waiting doing nothing. He's waiting and serving. Waiting and hearing. Waiting and chanting. But he's waiting. Waiting for Krishna's causeless mercy. And what is he also doing? All the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds. So he has his karma. We all, each and every one of us, have our individual karma. And while patiently accepting one's fate, he offers respectful obeisances to Krishna with his heart, with his words and body. Such a person who does this is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the personality of Godhead. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of God. The word susamichana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges, the last traces of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful activities. So it's happening by Krishna for a devotee. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord, and therefore the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. A sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord with his heart, words, and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardship a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes a legitimate son of God, as indicated here by the word dayabak. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the supreme pure Lord Krishna without undergoing a rigid purificatory process, which may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord. Very important. Srila Sridhar Swami comments in this regard, a short comment. Devotional service is the only reasonable process to follow, as stated by the verse beginning Tatte Unakampam, because again, it's not like husking rice, but it is just hearing and staying alive and tolerating and serving. No great, great endeavor. So it's the only reasonable process to follow, as stated by the verse beginning Tatte Unakampam Susamikshana. Susamikshana means eagerly expecting, when will your mercy arise? Simply suffering the fruits of work that have been earned by oneself in a detached spirit, rather than struggling excessively by austerities and so on, one who thus lives his life becomes the proper heir of liberation. For a devotee, in the same way as there is no other suitable means for gaining inheritance than to simply be alive, similarly there is no means for facilitating liberation apart from simply living out his life as a devotee. And Sanatana Goswami, we'll read just a little of his comment. Susamikshana means fully expecting. It has been stated how the reactions one has earned by his own activities must inevitably be suffered. So therefore, it is implied one should not pay regard to the happiness and distress resulting from them. Vipaka means the fruit of many different material activities. Offering obeisances with the heart, words, and body implies that one should indeed have attachment for this offering, for offering of obeisances, but not for anything else. And now we'll just read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment and we'll end here. Now that Brahma has rejected other processes and accepted bhakti as the means to attain Bhagavan Sri Krishna, the process of bhakti is described. So this is, in short, is the entire process of bhakti yoga. A devotee understands that the happiness and distress he undergoes due to performing bhakti and committing aparads are special mercy from the Lord. It is like the father who sometimes makes his child drink milk and sometimes makes him drink bitter neem juice. Have you ever drunk neem juice?
I have many times.
Many times? Does it taste good?
What's your definition of good?
If good means bad, it tastes very good. If good is bitter, yes?
Very
bitter. You like neem? Every day. How many leaves?
I don't know. I put the neem leaves, juice, and I dry it, and crush it like powder.
Powder. And then?
And I pour it sort of like 1 teaspoon.
In water? And you also drink neem when you were a boy, baby, or now?
Yes, my mother will, every now and then, when the season comes of all this, you know,
mosquitoes. Oh, yes.
Then she will give us some, crush the fresh leaves, put some water in them, and drink it.
But it didn't taste good. Did you look forward to it when you were a boy, Sitaram? Sometimes the father embraces and kisses his son, and other times he beats him. The devotee accepts whatever happens to him as the arrangement of the Lord acting for his benefit. The devotee thinks, "The Lord certainly knows what is best for me, even if I don't know." Calm and time have no effect on a devotee. So this is Krishna's personal arrangement for me. Out of his mercy, Krishna sometimes gives me happiness and sometimes gives me distress, considering how to engage me in his service. This point is confirmed. This is from about Prithu Maharaj says this when the Lord asks him, "What benediction do you want from me?" This is one main point of Prithu Maharaj's reply. As a father, not waiting for the son's demand, does everything for the benefit of the son, please bestow upon me whatever you think is best for me. The person who spends his life offering respects with body, mind, and words to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, like Prithu Maharaj, while tolerating the sufferings of austerity and other hardships, becomes the recipient, dayabhak, of two results: liberation from material bondage and service to the Lord, mukti pada. As the inheritance from the father maintains the life of the son, so the attainment of liberation and service to the Lord maintains the life of the devotee. Thus, while living in this world, the devotee remains fixed on the path of devotion. The Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.17 says, Dritaya eva sasantyasubhitoyadite anuvida. Only if they become your faithful followers are those who breathe actually alive. Otherwise, their breathing is like that of bellows. Same point from the second canto. One's life becomes successful by serving Krishna with devotion. Otherwise, the body is just like a bellows inhaling and exhaling air. So very wonderful points in Brahma's prayers. Okay, thank you very much. We'll stop here. Any questions or comments? You have any question? Mr. Brendan? What name did Giridhari Swami give you?
Shyam.
Shyam. Wow. And what you wanted a name with which letter? And what, how do you resolve this? Be and Shyam. You should be Shyam. Shyam's servant. Maybe that's one way to do it.
Shyam's
baby. Oh, that's another way. And Shyam is also, his complexion is like a bumblebee. Did you ever see a bumblebee? Do they have bumblebees in Australia? No. In Vrindavan you see them every once in a while, but not very frequently. Saktini, have you seen bumblebees in Vrindavan? How big are they? The one I saw was this big.
This may be your eyes.
Maybe. How big was the one you saw, Rasa? No? You have seen.
I don't really know which bumblebee.
They're black, big and black.
New Zealand is less than
But big and black.
They're big. They're very big.
They just keep flying in the pond?
Just keep flying. That's what they do. Looking for honey. Mm-hmm. Pollen.
Was that that time you came back with that very scary look on your face? It was that big.
No, that was from something else. Yes, question.
I thought it was interesting to hear that the John
or
spirit, I have mixed feelings about it.
About what?
What you read about the enjoying spirit in the Lord.
Yes, the Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. You have mixed feelings about it? Who do you wish to complain to? Yes. So you have a problem with Krishna trying to eradicate it, although you want to preserve it.
So
at least you know who to talk to, who to bring up your objection to. Yeah. And you know what he'll say? You want to preserve it? Okay, no problem. Yes, 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 no problem. But what he does is something else. You wanted to ask? So say if we say, is it sort of an enjoying spirit or a desire to enjoy specific things?
It's just a spirit. It's not like yes, generally once you take up the devotional service, it's not gross enjoying spirit, but on such a level it's still even using the process
as a means to your own happiness.
Always, yeah, there's always some
but if you got more happiness out of pleasing Krishna, would you give up the lesser happiness?
Yes.
Okay. That's bhakti.
I mean, even in terms of extracting the holy name.
But the idea is that one should chant or do service to please Krishna, and automatically one becomes happy, but that's not the purpose of doing it. Mm. And there are examples in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu Nectar Devotion that describe that if there's a choice between the devotee's own happiness and Krishna's service, their own ecstasy, they choose, they push away the ecstasy for their service. But one shouldn't imitate, but just follow the process as described and let Krishna take care of you.
He'll arrange for you.
Because if you hear, huh?
He'll arrange for you.
Yeah, he'll eradicate it in its time. But not before you're ready. Don't worry. But what happens if he thinks you're ready? Uh-oh.
It seems to be a deadly conditioned soul to deliver go away.
The what?
It seems to be a doubt of the mission soul will ever go away.
The doubt
of the mission soul, the enjoying mentality.
Yes.
You may engage in service, but at the same time you're thinking, oh, I just wish I had a more comfortable situation. I wish the weather wasn't bad. It wasn't too hot, wasn't too cold, it wasn't too wet. I wish I had better prashad, more money in the bank. The doubt will get something. It's sort of quite part of the doubt of, like, the comfort that you had in India in terms of spiritual life, to come to the West and take all the people starting to move with nothing materially. But the doubt of mission soul will never get anywhere near that. That's my doubt.
Krishna will eradicate it, don't worry. But he takes over the process. It doesn't go on by your power. You do your part in trying to serve him sincerely, that's what it seems, and then and wait for his mercy to remove it. See, if one, even what you said is a humble statement, it's conscious of something, that will I ever become an actual devotee? So that's glorious. So then when one prays to Krishna, Krishna, I'm at this level of devotional service for so many years and it's so frustrating for me. Please, I await your mercy to bring me closer to your lotus feet. So until one is conscious, that's not even possible. But that, which word was that? Do you remember which word it was about awaiting your mercy? I await your mercy.
Yes.
Huh? The Sanskrit word is tate anukampam or susamikshamana, means fully expecting. So there is a confidence. So that's another thing, that I'm under Krishna's protection. And we try to serve. And so therefore the humility will naturally go with devotional service. We notice from reading Chaitanya Charitamrita and Prabhupada's books too that the great devotees, they never feel themselves, yes, I am now pure, I've done it, it's so nice. No, they're painfully conscious of what they perceive as inconsistencies. So we shouldn't, when we perceive something, we should pray to surrender more deeply and fully, and be ready to do what Krishna wants. But what can we do? How do you become more than what you are? But again, by hearing more, the attraction to Krishna blossoms more. And then as that blossoms more, the inconsistencies become more obvious and glaring. So that creates a tension which is very helpful for spiritual life, humility and desire. Okay. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. Well, I should ask about the emotional studies for Bhakti Yoga. Obviously, when I first joined the movement, this says the science, the sexualization is the science that needs to be trying to do emotional studies and you get results. It's not just something that is out of the blue. So, I'm asking on the level of the Garasta. So we come to the emotional survey, we come here, and after some time in the practice, and then we have home, we take care of the family, we have to go to work, then we chant, we do some service here and there. But what really constitute devotional service on our part as a
doing it to please Krishna? Doing it because you can do your householder life in such and think I am the center and my family is the center, or you can do it with Krishna in the center and try to please him by your work. From the outside it may look exactly the same, but what your consciousness or heart and mind, that's between you and Krishna, how you're making an offering. And also, just as that verse we said, that Gyanai Priyasam Udrupas Stanestita Shrutigatam Tanavan Manobhya, just hear about Krishna. This is very important. This gives the life, this is the water of the devotional kripa. If we don't hear and chant, then we don't advance and serve. And make your family a temple. Because most of the people in the world are householders, and they can't relate to people living in temples. Really, they can't think of themselves ever being like that. But when they see householders who have nice families, they become very enthusiastic. That's something that they perceive that they can do. So it's very big preaching if it's done properly too.
This state of consciousness wherein John Milton has said they also serve who only stand and wait.
It's very deep. But yes. But what are they doing while they're standing and waiting?
Praying.
Okay.
Expecting.
So yeah.
Mercy, but not making complaints.
Yes. Yeah. That's the point. Oh yes, I get it. Yes, very nice.
So they are standing in the queue, there are so many ahead of them, they are getting their share. Others will come also.
Okay. Yeah. I was just reading a calendar that has a quote from Prabhupada on it every day, and it said on there that if you're a grihastha and your wife is attractive and obliging, and still you are performing the grihastha duties properly, then it's even higher than being, he said, sannyas, and you're doing your duty.
Anyway, if he did say that, he's trying to encourage the householders. Yeah. Don't worry.
Well, you know, you go out to work and you're offering, you're doing so much, you're offering
but if you don't hear and chant,
yeah,
you will die.
Yeah. But he's doing so much and surrounded by so much temptation that still he's...
If he doesn't hear and chant, he will die.
Yeah, definitely.
Spiritually. And associate with devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.